can't get through a session without one technical difficulty, right? Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Thank you very much. I'm going to be really focusing on a methodology as part of a larger scaling up research effort, and something that we've been using in 5 countries, and I'll share a little bit more about the methodology and some of the results. But we're, this project that I'm talking about, the overview, is it's a scaling up project, really taking a new family planning method, integrating it into national level family planning programs. So if you look at that nice opening slide, when you think about some of the pilot programs, which is represented by that image at the left, how do you take something that's a pilot program and scale it up? And how do you measure the scale-up effort itself, the processes and the outcomes? So that's what our research is actually focusing on. I have nothing to disclose. Thinking of scaling up then, thinking of systems, that you're putting something into a health system, this is a nice little analogy I like to use. And it represents different things to me when I think about scaling up. So the fact that you're bringing something new into an existing healthcare system creates this ripple effect. And everything changes everywhere until you reach a steady state, until it's institutionalized, it becomes normal service delivery. That's one way I think about it. The other way I think about it is if you're trying to actually support a scale-up process, then you're adding inputs at the very beginning, at where you begin in your pilot program. You have a lot of control. But as things scale up through multiple partners, you lose a lot of control about the quality of training, the quality of integration into supervision systems and all that kinds of things. So those are some of the things that you have to deal with evaluatively as you're trying to add something into a complex system. So what we've been doing, we're actually in the 6th year, we're in the analysis phase of a scale-up of the standard days method. It's a 5-year perspective, multi-site comparative study looking at processes and outcomes. We're implementing it in those countries. And the model that we use to inform both the planning and technical assistance as well as evaluation is a model that was developed by World Health Organization, ExpandNet, which is very systems-oriented, which is based a lot on social diffusion within complex systems and also has an insistence on core values. Because you take something to scale because it has some inherent elements into it, a population impact, but a certain value to it. And this model also says, well, what happens, you have to make sure that what you begin with at a pilot stage really diffuses out and becomes institutionalized. So this is the way we're thinking about it, guided again by this ExpandNet process, ExpandNet framework, and how we're actually measuring and monitoring scale-up. So you see we're really trying to do successful scale-up. But if you look at that y-axis, part of the scale-up, if you really want sustainable effort, is to look at institutionalization into normative documents and subsystems. You can see it when you're looking at a national system, it's going from budget line items, which is probably the hardest thing to do, but really getting people to value what they are helping scale up. Looking then at the x-axis, too, a lot of people think of scaling up as really, you train everybody, you get it in the norms and standards, and your job is complete. Well, if you want something sustainable and impact, you have to really look at all of these elements. And we've been using multi-year benchmarking to really chart scale-up progress for ourselves and the partners we're involved with in these different countries. Looking at another way, our logic model is really helping guide that effort. So it's sort of a roadmap, and you'll see that when you think of normal project, service delivery project, at least in the global reproductive health world that I live in, there's a lot of focus on quality improvement, but when you're really thinking systemically, you're moving from quality improvement to quality assurance because you're really trying to get into systems. You're looking for systems adjustments and not just TA to improve provider capacity. So it sort of shifts when you think of scaling up and measuring it, it kind of shifts what you start looking at. And I guess the whole idea of working in partnerships, too, that scaling up can't be done by one organization alone. And so, again, that makes it complex in terms of what you're evaluating. So these are the data sources for this larger study. And you'll see that in terms of for measuring coverage and quality, if you think of that diagram. We're working with household surveys, facility assessments, and service statistics, looking at process and sustainability, the benchmark monitoring about what you're achieving over time, event tracking, do environmental scans, are there some big policy changes that impact what you're doing, those kinds of questions you want to keep recording and aware of, and then individual interviews with family planning stakeholders, who really are at a very high-level position and can sort of think about sustainability in a very different way than people who are on the ground providing services. And the most significant change is a story collection methodology that really gets at values and unexpected effects, and that's what I'm going to focus the rest of this presentation on. Has anyone ever heard of most significant change? You've done it? It's a really interesting story-based methodology that was originally developed by Dart and Davies in Asia to try and assess complex social changes in community-based programs. But it's really appropriate for other complex systems changes and has been adapted in different contexts. And we've actually adapted it for our health systems change study. But what it involves, you can see that nice little cartoon there. So this is just a way to sort of highlight the differences in a methodology. So you've got your person on the left, you know, your classic M&E person that really has indicators that measure X things, critically important. But you also have this person on the right who may be living a scaling up experience a bit differently and has been impacted, and there's been some effect. And so the idea of using stories to collect how the person is influencing a scale-up effort is the basis of this. We thought it was important to add this kind of a methodology, which is inductive, which is really indicator-free, to really try and capture some of the stuff that we're going to be capturing in our other M&E system data collection. So if you think about it, and we've had a chance to think about it a lot as we've been working in these five countries, it's a really unique qualitative methodology. So it's an inductive qualitative. So it allows you, of course, to identify unexpected effects, results that weren't detected in your normal M&E, but also explores how the process of scaling up is viewed by those who are actually involved in the process and really gets at some of those intangible aspects that you want to really try and capture in a measurement system of values around scale up. The other nice element, though, is it's also participatory. So that creates, you know, you're working with multiple organizations as you're trying to do a scale-up effort at national level. By bringing people together to reflect on stories, it creates this space for dialogue and reflection. So that can contribute to program improvements, and it creates this common vision across actors on what your scale-up goals and where you're going. So this is kind of, in a nutshell, very quick, what it looks like. You know, it's basically a cycle that you have your scale-up activities, it creates some change in practice or use that leads to people's reflection in the form of stories that can be used in a learning and improvement cycle. And it's based only on two questions. And the question is, like, looking back over the last year, what do you think was the most significant change you had experienced? And why? And the why is really critical, because the why really gets that kind of the analysis of the person who has gone through it. So you get the fact, what they say happened, but then why it happened, why it was significant, is really critical for this methodology. So the way it works is pretty simple. You establish story domains, which are broad categories of action, and then you go through a story collection process. And the way we did it was we brought our partner organizations in these five countries and introduced them to the methodology, and then asked every organization who was involved in scale-up in whatever way to collect 12 stories of whoever they want. So it was a purposive selection of people who they thought were analytical and had an interesting story to tell. And then you go through two rounds of story selection. So the first round is within the organizations itself. So they've collected these 12 stories. They sit around as a committee, read the stories out loud, and decide, of the stories, what are the most significant? What shows the most significant impact that's being observed by these storytellers? Then you've got kind of triaged at one level, and then it moves up to a national committee level, which is multi-organizational, and you go through the same process. And what happens is, by forcing kind of reflection on significance, you end up getting the most significant. The domains we were using were really focused on a scale-up model. So we were looking at changes in the lives of users, people who adopted this new method, changes in service providers, what happened once they added it to their family planning services, and in program managers and other changes. So I'm going to give you just a real, I'm not even going to tell you the stories, but I can share them. We've got a book now of stories of significance. But from three perspectives in Mali, the storyteller tells why, once they started using this method, what it changed their lives. And these are the things that you see. What was significant for this woman? And then from the program manager's side, and this is the Mali stakeholders who actually were at the National Committee selection meeting, what is it from a program manager's perspective was most significant about adding SDM to their programs? And you get these kinds of reflections. And then also from the person who is providing services. In this case, we were working both with the public sector, with the ministries of health, as well as with private sector social marketing programs. And so this woman is actually a seller. She's a vendor who basically started adding SDM to what she was selling in terms of contraceptives. So this is what was most significant to her. So where we are now is we're actually finalizing a cross-country analysis of these stories. We've collected 155 stories from 12 organizations. We're still waiting for DR, Democratic Republic of Congo, but I'm told that they will soon arrive. But really looked at, I'll show you some of the analysis, but really what when you start looking across countries with the same method that's being added, what do you see? Are there some similarities? What's interesting about the method itself is as participation really varied, it was a bit of a challenge for some people. They were really uncomfortable with something that took them beyond surveys and even focus group discussions and key informant interviews. This was really new, and the fact that it was participatory, really, it takes a while to get used to that kind of a methodology. And you had to really sort of start where the country was in terms of their culture and healthcare system. So in India, where we did it, you don't really even have a private sector. All you have is the public sector offering family planning services and a very top-down, driven, quantitatively results-oriented government. We couldn't even get the ministry to actually do the story selection. And so our staff went out and collected stories and then sat with the ministry to determine which were most significant. Whereas in Rwanda, who was really embracing a lot of new innovations, we started very early with Ministry of Health and partner involvement through the planning, the data collection, and everything. So it just really changed. It sort of depends on where you are. But methodologically, it also means you have to change a bit the methodology to suit that. So when you're looking across countries, this is just some of the early findings that we've seen. And you can see there's quite a bit of similarity from a manager perspective, a provider, and a user perspective. But when you think of values, you can see some of the values that are coming out too. And at different perspectives also have different values, but there's some similarities also across these different stakeholders. So some of the challenges, as I said, so there's a lot of some initial skepticism. And as we went through the stakeholders went through the actual analysis of stories of significance, one of the challenges is getting to understand significant compared to what? What's your standard? And according to the methodology, it's something that the committee itself decides. And so people struggled with that, and some people embraced the challenge, and others were really put off by it. The other thing, again, in sort of the family planning global health world, is family planning. There's a lot of emphasis on success stories, and people are kind of conditioned almost to talk about family success stories. But these aren't stories of success. These are stories of significance. And so the idea in the training, you have to put a lot of emphasis on basically, like, we're not here to collect success stories. We're looking for most significant in the lives of these people. And then the process, some of the things I already talked about, you know, adapting it to cultural and health systems. The other thing that we learned is that people, even though the core of this methodology is based on storytelling, which in oral traditions, which are really important in a lot of societies. People are great at telling stories, but it's not so easy to collect a story and then write it up so that you can take it through the process. So we had to do a lot of training in how you actually, what's a good story, what are the elements of a good story, how do you collect it. We had forms to guide some of the discussions with the people, but they needed a little help. So it really is an important methodology to add to your methodology toolkit in terms of proving a scaling up process. A lot of people value a return on investment, like number of users, but there are other values to think about when you're measuring scale up. And it's something that we thought was really interesting and would encourage all of you to use it when appropriate. Thank you.
Well, we are finally at the time that I know many of you have been waiting for, which is our Q&A period. So if you have questions for individual presenters or sort of the panel in general, if you would just raise your hand and I'll call on you and I'll need to repeat your question for the recording. Questions? Yes?
I guess for the first presenter, if you're using online tracking and fidelity, do the training modules themselves have a timer where it logs what time they logged on to and what time they ended it, or is that in
Second. So the question is if there's a time period related to the modules, and if you could use the microphone, actually.
I don't think I put that as another data source. We do have tracking data that was actually from the online training. And so all of that, we also have all that kind of background information.
Would you consider that more reliable than the training module themselves?
Yeah, that's actually interesting because it's one of the things now we want to look at is because we did ask teachers also, like, how often did you use a training? How long did you spend on it? And we actually have actual data, and we are finding that there are inconsistencies there. So that's one of the next things that we're going to start looking at is a comparison of those. So yes, that is, it's more reliable because it's the actual time. What we're going to look at is why are the teachers not able to report that accurately. So.
Other questions? Yes. Yep.
So the question is about the most significant story, sort of the measures for selection and reducing bias in that process.
Yeah, that's a good question. As part of the story selection committee, when they convene, they are asked to determine what are their criteria for judging the stories. Because otherwise you do get, like, this is my story and it's the best one and that's what you want to avoid.
So to summarize, we are dealing now with the notorious evaluation black box. How do we deal with it, and particularly for multi-level, multi-determinant type programs?
I think that's an excellent question because, you know, not everything that you do within your program is going to be able to focus on each and every aspect and each and every determinant of that health issue. I think that is more sort of a discussion between the funders, the stakeholders, and the evaluators in itself to figure out, you know, of the five social determinants of obesity as a problem, what are the, you know, top three, top four that we can actually fund and evaluate? At the end of the day, it is to determine what are the best possible questions that we can answer given the constraints of our funding, given the constraints of our political and social environment, given the constraints of the expectations of not only the evaluators but also the expectations of the stakeholders and those who are participants of the program. More so, the black box problem is best answered when there is input from the community, when there is an input from those who are going to influence the program and its outcomes the most. And that is not the evaluator and that is not the funder, but it's the participants and the people who are going to actually receive sort of the benefits or the failures. Those who are going to be impacted by the benefits and the failures of the program. So I would essentially go back to, you know, looking at what are those determinants that would impact the community in itself. That's how you would essentially determine how you would want to tailor your back, influence your back, black box problem.
So I think one of the things that I struggle with as a programmer and now a novice researcher, I like the idea of marrying the two, but I think it's around primary on what is the program intended to do. A lot of times we just try to measure everything. We have these unintended consequences, and then we add that to the evaluation. Well, that's part of the issue with us really getting outcomes for these programs, because we really need to focus the effort. So I think it's around what is the program primarily aimed to do, and is there a way that you can rigorously collect the data and analyze it and measure that? And if there are unintended outcomes, maybe have that as a secondary, doing some sort of qualitative. But that's why we did journals. We had online journals, so they were able to put in whatever they want, and we could analyze that and look at it afterwards. But there were primary things we were trying to measure with this project.
And actually, as much as I regret to say this, we are actually at the end of our session, and I want to be respectful of everyone's time. But my guess is that if you have questions that have not yet been answered, that our wonderful presenters will be willing to answer them at this point. And I just want to thank our presenters so very much for these wonderful presentations. Thank you all for coming. Clearly, everyone is very excited to see everyone in the room. And as my last announcement, I just want to mention for the public health education and health promotion section members, we do have a social this evening from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Here in the building in room 2006. So with that, thank you for coming and enjoy the rest of the conference.